Chapter 10, Closing In. Tang Chi Shi, Studio 1104, yes. Should I notify her of your arrival? The young concierge looked up from his computer. Jack and Lei were standing in the lobby of Tang Chi Shi's apartment building. The simplistic but well-maintained high-rise was located close to the expansive campus of Beijing University and included a concierge service in the lobby to assist its inhabitants. No, under no circumstances is the suspect to be informed. Is that understood? Lei instructed. The suspect? The concierge wondered. Lei put both hands on the concierge's desk and leaned forward. Is that understood? He repeated the question with a hint of frustration. The concierge gulped and nodded. Good. We require access to her studio. I assume you do have a master key?
We do. It's for emergencies, the man replied.
Young man, Lei said through his teeth, I am the police. By definition, this constitutes an emergency, and we will have another one if you do not stop complicating my investigation. Hand over the key.
Yes, officer.
The concierge hastily entered a code to open a drawer at his desk. He took out the key and presented it to Lei with shaking hands. Lei grabbed the key and motioned to Jack to get going.
It's a straightforward layout,
the concierge called out behind them in an attempt to be helpful.
Studio apartment, one main room, a kitchen nook to its right, and a bathroom to its left. That's it.
Lei turned around and nodded in appreciation. With their chance to catch Nick's killer only moments away, they rode the elevator up to the 11th floor in silence. Jack's hands involuntarily flexed in tense rhythm in anticipation, while Lei looked straight ahead at the door. A soft chime broke the silence as the elevator door slid open and revealed an empty, tiled hallway. Their footsteps echoed in the corridor as they closed in on door 1104. Lei pulled out his gun, holding it down but prepared to raise it immediately. With the master key in his other hand, he signaled Jack to place himself next to the door. He took a deep breath, gently inserted the key, and unlocked the door as quietly as possible. When he heard a soft click, he pushed the door open with force and rushed into the apartment, gun in a low, ready position.
Police, you are under arrest!
Jack peeked around the doorframe. The apartment was vacant. Lei stood in the middle of the room. He motioned Jack to stay put and carefully inched towards the bathroom. Taking in a deep breath, he gently nudged the bathroom door open with his foot. Apart from a towel and a selection of cosmetic products on the shelf, it too was empty. Lei let out his breath and slid his gun back into his holster.
All clear.
Jack entered and studied the studio in more detail. A small desk with a chair was standing at the left wall. On it, a closed notebook and two biology textbooks about next-generation sequencing and genetic data analysis. Beside the desk was a wide cupboard with various books, ranging from romance and science fiction novels to financial literature, showcasing the diverse interests of the suspect. Next to the apartment door was a wardrobe with jackets and shoes. A picture depicting a famous K-pop group was hanging next to it. Apart from a rice cooker and some washed dishes next to the sink, the kitchen counter was empty. Shelves along the walls of the kitchen nook were overflowing with spice jars, see-through plastic containers full of rice and other grains, countless mugs, culinary books, and other little knickknacks. A simple couch that likely functioned as a bed at night was placed near the window. A photograph hung above the couch depicting a strikingly beautiful landscape with orange glowing sand dunes in front of snow-covered mountain ranges. Adjacent to it was a small coffee table covered in magazines next to a small digital clock. A soft pink rug lay in front of the couch, and on it a pair of slippers, hinting at the mundanity of daily life. The entire apartment looked disarmingly normal, and not at all like the living arrangements of a person who murdered two people in cold blood in the last 48 hours, Jack thought. Lei pulled out two pairs of gloves and handed one to Jack. They started to comb through the apartment. The cupboard's drawers revealed more mundane items, including various clothes, some cheap jewelry, and an assortment of cosmetics. Lei moved to the desk and opened the notebook. It's password protected. Our guys will have to look at it. He closed it again and turned around, noticing a quizzical expression on Jack's face. What is it?
Not sure. Look at this.
Jack pointed at the digital clock on the table by the couch. Instead of displaying the time, it showed two large numbers underneath each other. The top number read 958,522. Below it was a number that fluctuated every few seconds and currently stood at 312,846. Lay approached, studying the device. "That's odd." "What is it?" Jack wondered. "I'm pretty sure that's a Bitcoin node with a display showing the block height and the conversion rate in US dollars. See these small letters next to the numbers? BH at the top stands for block height, and dollar is the current price. Let me check." Lay pulled out his phone and looked up the current Bitcoin block height and price. "Yes, block height and Bitcoin price. See here?" He handed Jack his cell phone. "You're right." Jack scratched his head. "What's the block height?" "It's like an internal metronome of the network that cannot be altered. The network produces a new transaction block every 10 minutes on average. Some people like to use it as true world time, as it is the same everywhere on Earth." "Strange. I mean, I know about Bitcoin. I even have a bit of it in my 401k since adding it to my portfolio 2 years ago. But I've never given its technical details much thought. How come you know about block height?" "I'm not as old as you are, Jack," Lay joked. "But more importantly, I have to. Bitcoin has a complicated history in China. We cracked down hard on it over the years and even had a total ban on exchanges, mining, and the whole infrastructure at one point. When it became clear that no one can stop it, and Bitcoin established itself more and more in the financial world as a hard asset, it was unbanned again. In the end, we banned and unbanned all or part of its infrastructure so many times over the years that, as a police officer, you had to learn more about it to make sure you are on top of the current legal situation and understand what exactly is allowed or not right now. Can you buy it, mine it, and pay with it? The government likes to keep us on our toes on that one, that's for sure," he chuckled. "It's legal in China now, isn't it?" "Sort of. It's not that straightforward. It isn't banned anymore, but it's not openly encouraged either. More importantly, government employees are prohibited from having Bitcoin or contributing to the network."
"So you are not allowed to have it?" Jack asked. Lay nodded.
"The general population can acquire Bitcoin, but as a police officer, I am not allowed. I would have loved to participate in its recent rise just as you did, that's for sure. But it is what it is. I can't complain. I'm doing well." "The thing is, this is also true for Tong Xixi. As a nurse employed by a government-run hospital, she shouldn't technically have any, and she is certainly not allowed to support the network with a node. Makes you wonder why she's so openly displaying her interest in it."
Jack looked at the digital clock again. It was surprising to him that in a country like China, with its centralized governance and penchant for regulation, something as decentralized as Bitcoin could even find a foothold. He understood why the Chinese government, while no longer outright banning Bitcoin, was wary of its implications. Prohibiting government employees who were essential cogs in their centralized machinery from holding Bitcoin made sense in many ways. As a decentralized currency beyond government control, it posed a significant risk to the party. After all, holding Bitcoin provided a degree of financial independence and autonomy that the government could see as a threat. As long as government employees' salaries and savings are in yuan, the party can exercise tight control over them. But with Bitcoin, they hold an uncensorable, fully mobile, and unconfiscatable virtual asset that could allow them to bypass China's financial sector, making them somewhat independent of government influence and controls. Even in the US, Jack thought, acceptance had been slow initially. Only 2 years ago, with the approval of Bitcoin ETFs, the US began embracing the idea of Bitcoin as a mainstream financial asset. It had marked a significant shift, and many, including Jack, had started to include it in their pension plans. Wondering if the nurse's involvement with Bitcoin might be relevant to catching her, he shifted his attention back to the apartment.
"We need to get into that notebook," he said. "It might contain more information about her activities or motives."
"I agree."
Lei pulled out his phone to request IT and forensic support. They'll be here in half an hour. In the meantime, we should head over to the university hospital, talk to her colleagues. Someone might know her whereabouts.
She could also be on her way back here. We should place someone here to catch her in case she walks in, Jack suggested.
True. Lei made another phone call. A patrol car will be here in 5 minutes. They have her profile and will be on the lookout at the reception.
He pocketed his phone. Let's head over to the hospital. It's just a couple of streets away.
As they headed towards the door, a tiny webcam peeking through the handle of a mug on the upper kitchen shelf recorded their exit. Minutes later, Lei parked the car near the hospital entrance. Located at the northeast end of the vast university campus, the Beijing University International Campus Hospital was considered among China's finest medical centers. Equipped with the latest medical equipment, it functioned as both a frontline healthcare center and the country's primary institution for molding the next generation of medical professionals. Lei and Jack entered the atrium and went to the information counter, where a young woman in a nurse uniform greeted them.
We need to know where Tang Shishi's lab is located, Lei said, displaying his police credentials.
Nurse Tang Shishi works in the genetic lab, ground floor to the research and diagnostics wing, laboratory room 0734. Should I call her?
She is still here, Lei asked, perplexed. The woman glanced at her screen again.
Yes, she clocked in at 3:50 this morning and hasn't left yet.
But it's past noon, Lei noted with irritation. I thought she worked the night shift. The receptionist looked at her records. After a few rapid keystrokes, she replied,
She does, but last week she requested a change in her hours, which was granted. She starts her shift around 4 a.m. and winds up by 2 p.m.
Jack and Lei exchanged a look, processing the new information. Another chance to catch the suspect just fell into their laps.
Thank you, Lei acknowledged. She's not to be notified we're here.
Of course.
They briskly walked the sterile corridors of the hospital, following the clear signage directing them toward the general diagnostic lab. As they approached room 0734, they could hear the subdued hum of machines and faint conversations inside. After confirming that the room only had one exit to their corridor, they entered the lab. Lei held his badge high above his head with one hand. His other hand touched the grip of his gun.
Beijing police, no one leaves the room.
The lab's occupants paused, turning to face the new arrivals. An assortment of technicians and nurses, all looking baffled by the sudden intrusion, stood in place in front of state-of-the-art sequencing machines. Biological samples were lined up on trays on the tables next to several desks with workstations. A man carrying a large styrofoam box with dry ice froze in mid-stride right in front of them, and a fog of carbon dioxide spilled over Jack's and Lei's shoes. No one attempted to flee.
We are looking for Tong Shishi, Lei called out.
Nobody moved as a palpable tension thickened the air. Jack scanned the faces of the workers, trying to discern her among them.
Tong Shishi, Lei repeated more firmly.
A young male technician hesitantly stepped forward.
Officer, he began, his voice a bit shaky, Miss Tong is not here at the moment.
What?
Lei asked. The technician cleared his throat.
About 10 minutes ago, her phone rang. She must have received some bad news because she turned white as a ghost when she looked at it. She ran over to the sequencer, the man gestured at a machine next to him, and started some analysis. She paced frantically in front of the machine, waiting for its results. She kept muttering to herself the whole time, ignoring my questions. She seemed scared. Then, less than a minute ago, the machine beeped. She grabbed a memory stick from the machine, almost ripped it out, and took off.
Lei grabbed the man by his lab collar.
A minute ago? Why didn't you say so? Where to?
I don't know. He shook his head. She used our staff exit over there. It goes out to the service corridors we used to move around without interrupting patient care within the hospital.
Lei let go of the man. He slammed the door open, ran into the narrow corridor, and tripped over a doctor. The impact caused Lei to stumble against the wall. Jack followed and grabbed the confused doctor.
Did you see a woman rush out of here? Tong Shi Shi? Small, long hair, probably looked like she was in a hurry?
Shi Shi? Yes, sure, a few seconds ago. She went this way.
The doctor gave them a startled look and pointed down the corridor.
Come on!
Jack beckoned, pulled Lee up, and started running down the corridor. They passed several confused nurses and doctors, skidded around a corner, and found themselves in front of an emergency exit. They rushed through the door. A burst of fresh air greeted them as they stepped onto the vast campus. Sunlight glinted off the paved walkways, obstructing their view at first. When their eyes adjusted, Lei spotted a small person with a lab coat running towards another building about 80 yards away.
There!
He shouted and started sprinting before Jack could register the fleeing figure. As Jack followed in pursuit, he saw the woman coming to a short stop in front of a side entrance of the building. Lei shouted and pulled his gun. She looked back, fear in her eyes. It was Tong Shi Shi. Lei was closing in, but before he could reach her, she managed to slide through the door and slammed it shut behind her, causing Lei to crash against it. It was locked. A red light blinked above its handle, indicating that an access card was required to open the door.
Damn it!
He cursed. Jack arrived next to him, panting. Looking around, he saw a man coming around the corner pushing a small wagon loaded with cleaning equipment.
Can you open this door?
Jack shouted at him.
I could. Why?
The man replied with a skeptical look. Lei pulled out his badge.
Open this door for us now!
The man hesitated just for a moment before rushing over and swiping his card over the handle.
I need this,
Lei exclaimed, snatching the card from the startled man's hand. Without missing a beat, he lunged forward. Jack squeezed himself through the closing entrance behind him. They found themselves in another lengthy corridor reserved for service personnel. Trays filled to the brim with laboratory supplies and medical tools stood on both sides of the walls. At the end of the hallway, they saw Tong Shi Shi running towards yet another exit, ignoring Lei's commands to stop. They chased after her and barreled out of the service corridor, the door slamming shut behind them with a pronounced thud. As they spilled onto a street that dissected the university campus, they glimpsed Tong Shi Shi disappearing into the entrance of another building directly in front of them. Not breaking stride, they darted across, narrowly avoiding a student on a bike. They skidded to a stop before the building's entrance. Another blinking door, another barrier. While Jack leaned against the wall to catch his breath, Lei swiped the card and pulled the door open in one fluid motion. They were met with a vast hallway lined with interior windows that allowed a view into the multiple classrooms connected to it. Inside, professors were delivering lectures and students scribbled notes. Some glanced curiously at the two intruders that charged past their windows.
Where'd she go?
Lei panted as they reached an intersection, trying to discern which direction Tong Shi Shi had taken among the branching corridors. Jack pointed to a figure hunched over in the corner of the corridor to their right, about 40 paces away.
There!
Tong Shi Shi stood with her head resting against the wall, panting, the weight of her escape wearing on her.
There is no use in continuing to run. Tong Shi Shi, you are under arrest,
Lei shouted, pointing the gun at her. Suddenly, she smashed her fist against the corridor wall, and a shrill alarm pierced the air. Panic ensued as the fire alarm set off. Doors burst open. A flood of students poured into the corridors between them and Tong Shi Shi. A wave of bodies buffeted Lei, his progress halted. He was forced to point his gun upwards as he tried pushing through, but the sheer number of students scattering in all directions was overwhelming. Jack, a bit further back, was similarly swamped. As the corridor slowly cleared, she was gone, vanished amidst the panic she'd triggered, leaving behind only the echo of the alarm and her lab coat on the floor. In the hope that speaking to her co-workers could provide them with a new, tangible lead, Jack and Lei returned to the genetic diagnostic lab. A palpable sense of frustration replaced their previous confidence. Jack was tired. The lab coat of Tong Shi Shi now draped over his shoulder was a stinging reminder of their missed opportunity. As they approached the lab, he glanced sidelong at his partner. Deep furrows in Lei's brow and his tightening lips betrayed his disappointment. He was considered a prodigy. The chief had even called him his best man in front of the Municipal Committee Secretary of Beijing,
Yet, together with Jack, he had made two grave miscalculations during this short investigation. The first misstep had been their dangerous decision to confront the Baja Hui, a risky face-off that Jack knew could have ended in tragedy for him. Then they made a decision based on outdated information from the police database. Opting to scout Tong Shisha's residence first instead of her workplace might have cost them the only chance they had of apprehending her. It was clear to Jack that Tong Shisha had somehow been notified of their arrival. But how did she know they were coming? Did someone send her a message that they were after her? Maybe the concierge? Did they inadvertently set off some alarm system when they accessed her apartment? Maybe when they tried to log into her notebook? When they re-entered the lab, they encountered a different situation than before. Campus security was already present, discussing matters with the medical staff. A doctor was offering words of comfort to a visibly shaken lab assistant. Jack looked around the lab. His eyes lingered on the whiteboards filled with notes, the biohazard stickers, and the small personal touches each worker added to their space. All of it seemed normal, even mundane. Yet somewhere in this room might be the key to unraveling the mystery of Tong Xie Xie. When the doctor noticed their presence, he stepped in front of Lei. "What is going on here?" he demanded to know with an edge of authority to his tone. Lei, clearly exhausted, responded, "Who might you be?" "I am Dr. Lo, head of the diagnostic department," the doctor replied curtly. "I've been told two officers stormed in earlier, brandishing firearms. It's caused a great deal of distress to my team." Lei pinched the bridge of his nose between his fingers in an attempt to gather himself. "I'm Officer Jung, Beijing Police, and this is my partner, Mr. Decker. We are investigating a double homicide. Tong Shishi is our prime suspect." The doctor was taken aback, genuine surprise apparent. "Shishi? That doesn't make any sense. She's a fantastic nurse, friendly, always on time, dedicated, a team player. You must be mistaken." Lei sighed. "I wish it were so. Doctor, can you tell us what Tong Shishi was working on in your lab?" "Well, this is our genetic diagnostic unit," the doctor began, gesturing around. "State-of-the-art, next-generation sequencing machinery running at full capacity every hour of the day. The core of our work revolves around the comprehensive profiling of patient DNA and RNA. Every day, we analyze hundreds of samples for various reasons, either for patient stratification, diagnosis, or measuring treatment responses. Miss Tong was mostly in charge of running the night shift in my department." "Is it true that she recently switched from the night shift to an early morning schedule?" "Why, yes. A week ago, she requested a slight shift in her working hours. I was happy to accommodate her request. She is an exceptional worker, and having her here during the busy morning hours when the handover of the night's analysis to the morning shift needed coordination seemed like a win-win to me." "We need to check Tong Shishi's work." "As I said, she was in charge of running the sequencing here during the night hours. Demanding work, but nothing unusual." He turned to the computer terminal at the sequencing machine and pulled up her work notebook. "This was her workplace. See? She mostly analyzed and categorized the data coming from the sequencers and made sure the documentation for the data handover to the morning shift was in order." "What's that?" Jack pointed to a file list at the end of her lab notebook. "That's a list of samples she analyzed herself. Whenever she had downtime in her data management task, Miss Tong managed to squeeze in some bench work on her own, preparing samples and feeding them into the sequencers. As I said, she is an exceptionally hard worker." "Can you open the files she was working on?" "Sure, one moment." The doctor clicked on the last file name. An error message popped up. "That's odd. The link leads directly to an external drive no longer connected to the machine. The file was apparently never saved onto our network." "The memory stick," Lei murmured. "What memory stick?" the doctor asked in surprise. "Your technician here told us that Miss Tong copied some files from the sequencer to a memory stick before she ran away." "A direct data transfer circumventing our network?" the doctor frowned. "That would be
highly irregular and against our protocols, I might add. We do adhere to good clinical practice here. Every data generated from patient material needs to be meticulously protocoled, stored, and backed up on our servers immediately. The doctor tried to open the following files on the list. I cannot open the last files she worked on. They all seem to have been copied directly to an external drive without going through our network. What was she doing? He continued to click on the files until one successfully opened. This one works. It seems like a regular sequencing job. Nothing atypical. We do hundreds of these daily, as I said. We need to find out what exactly Tong She She was working on with this machine. We'll have to confiscate it, Lei decided. The doctor's eyes widened. You can't do that. This machine is vital for our clinical diagnostic work. Patients' lives depend on it. Even if your team is quick, one cannot simply unplug it, transport it to another location, and afterward plug it back into our system ready to go. It requires a lengthy recalibration process. We can't just stop our patient care because of your investigation. Lei glanced at the multiple machines in the room. You have others? Yes, and I told you they are all running at maximum capacity. Every machine we take off the network means hundreds of samples whose analysis is delayed and dozens of patients we cannot adequately diagnose and treat. Taking even one offline would jeopardize patient care. Lives are at stake here. Dr. Lowe shot back, the weight of his responsibilities evident. Lei's expression softened slightly, understanding the doctor's predicament. Fine, but we will have our IT forensics team look at every data analysis and file transfer that originated from this machine in the last week. You can continue to use it to diagnose your patients and generate new results, but no data is to be removed. Is that understood? Of course. As I said, GCP regulations demand that we store them anyway. We will not tamper with any data. And you? Lei pointed to the young technician who told them about Tong Shisha's activities before her escape. You're coming with us. The technician's eyes widened in surprise. Me? You worked closely with her, didn't you? And you were the last one to speak to her before she took off. We'll have some further questions. You come with us. Lei turned his attention to Dr. Lowe. Unless, Doctor, you're suggesting his presence in this lab is also crucial to saving your patients' lives? Dr. Lowe didn't hesitate. Joe? Oh no, you can take him.